I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
For Thursday, November the 11th, 2021, it's The Brief from WABE. I'm Jim Burris. On day five of witness testimony in the murder trial of three white men accused of killing Ahmaud Arbery, and jurors heard from the owner of the unsecured property Arbery had stopped into the day he was killed. Lisa Hagen has more from Brunswick.
Larry English told case lawyers he'd had a dream to live somewhere on the water. In 2019, he'd been slowly building a home in the neighborhood Ahmaud Arbery was eventually killed in. In a deposition recorded last month, lawyers walked English through several surveillance videos of various people entering his unsecured construction site. Arbery was among them, as was a white couple and a group of kids who built bike ramps out of plywood on the property. Defense attorneys have said the neighborhood was a community on edge, out of fear of property crimes, and that the three defendants chased Arbery out of a sense of duty. The landowner himself says he never authorized Greg or Travis McMichael to pursue intruders on his land. Lisa Hagen, WABE News.
Republicans are pushing for the Gwinnett County Commission to get bigger. The move cleared a committee today. As Susanna Capiluto reports, there's contention over race, transparency, and cost.
Republicans want to expand the Gwinnett County Commission from 4 to 9 districts. They proposed a map that had little public input and was drawn by Republicans. Currently, 4 of 5 board members in Gwinnett are Black. In a hearing, Democratic State Senator Emanuel Jones questioned the bill's sponsor, Senator Clint Dixon, about the makeup of the new districts.
So out of your 9 equal member districts comparably, how many of those are African American?
I don't have the data in front of me. You apparently do.
So well, this you, is your bill. You should have the data in front of you. You gave us this data.
Jones pointed out that 5 of the 9 new districts in Gwinnett would have a plurality of white voters. But Republican State Representative Chuck F. Strachan defended the map, saying as drawn, it would comply with the Voting Rights Act.
The Gwinnett County Commission map that's proposed here today reflects Gwinnett's diversity and ensures that candidates of choice of the minority community in Gwinnett County can be elected. And therefore, this is compliant with federal law.
Pichaya Poiwinichuckle, an attorney with the Southern Poverty Law Center, told lawmakers that a lack of local public input in crafting the bill, as well as its intent, will matter in a court challenge.
The fact that this bill seeks to reconstitute a historic board of commissioners governed by members of color, and that this bill precisely and uniquely targets one of the most diverse counties in the state, all indicate that race was a driving factor in the drafting, consideration, and proposal of SB 6EX.
Another factor is cost, which Democrats estimate at an extra $2 million to Gwinnett taxpayers for salaries and staff for more commissioners. Gwinnett County Commission Chairwoman Nicole Hendrickson, who was not consulted on the bill, urged the committee to reject it.
Honor local control. Give the input back to the residents.
But the bill passed along partisan lines and could be taken up by the Senate next week. Susanna Capiluto, WABE News.
The infrastructure bill passed by Congress over the weekend invests, among other things, $135 million to build a network of electric vehicle charging stations in Georgia. As Emil Moffitt reports, the movement toward more electric vehicles in the state does have the support of some Georgia Republican lawmakers. Some, not all.
Among the 13 Republicans in the U.S. House who crossed the aisle to pass the $1 trillion infrastructure bill, none are from Georgia.
So the question is, why did every single Georgia Republican oppose this popular historic legislation.
That's Congresswoman Nikema Williams, who also chairs the Georgia Democratic Party.
What this bill does is it ensures that electrification of vehicles isn't just for a few, that we can introduce this to the masses to make sure that we're reducing our carbon footprint.
Among those who voted no on the infrastructure bill was Republican Congressman Andrew Clyde. He says spending millions on charging stations is wasteful, even though his district includes Commerce, Georgia, where thousands of workers will soon be building batteries for electric vehicles. Georgia Public Service Commissioner Tim Echols, a fellow Republican, says Clyde's view on electric vehicles isn't unusual.
It's just been slow for Republicans to come around.
But Echols, a strong advocate of electric vehicles, says jobs and the introduction of EV pickup trucks could help sway rural Georgians.
And I think this battery plant and these trucks are going to be an important, quote, political justification, if you will, that my Republican colleagues, you know, need in order to fully embrace them.
Echols applauds Governor Brian Kemp for forming the Electric Mobility and Innovation Alliance over the summer. He's also encouraging the GOP-controlled legislature to bring back the electric vehicle tax credit that expired in 2015. Emil Moffitt, WABE News.
Georgia Congressman Hank Johnson is leading the call for an investigation into why two federal judges would hire a law clerk with a documented history of, quote, racist, bigoted conduct. In a letter to the Supreme Court and to the 11th Circuit here in Atlanta, Johnson recounts several troubling but very public instances where the newly hired clerk used racist and bigoted language. For example, when working for the right-wing group Turning Point USA, she's alleged to have sent a text message to coworkers that said, quote, I hate black people, like, expletive, them all. WABE legal analyst Paige Pate is here with me to discuss the situation. And Paige, can you first put into some perspective for us how important a clerk is to a federal judge?
Well, Jim, law clerks for federal circuit court judges have a lot of responsibility. They are generally the ones to review the case once it comes into the court. They often draft opinions for the court. They research the issues, and they're generally considered to be the conscience of the judge. I mean, they work very closely with the judge in making a determination about a specific case and what that opinion is going to look like once it's published.
Is this a hard position to come by?
Oh, it's very hard, very competitive.
The Chief Justice of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals here in Atlanta is involved. How does that complicate the investigation?
Well, it complicates it because judicial clerks and their judges, that's a tight, close relationship. I think most judges consider their clerks to be like family, and they stay in touch with them, not just while they're working with the court, but well after. And so those discussions, what they say in chambers about any particular case or about just their view on the law, that's normally held in strict confidence. I have never seen a situation like this where a judge has hired a clerk who had views that not only are this disturbing, but were this publicized.
Well, by hiring someone with an alleged past like this clerk has, does it put into question any decisions on race or equality that the court might hear?
Well, Jim, I think it certainly could, and that's what's problematic here. It's not just whether this particular clerk will decide a case one way or the other. It's not whether this particular clerk's views on race are now what they were apparently in the past. It's the perception of having someone employed by the federal government, by the federal court system, who has in the past made statements that would make a certain group of people, a large group of people in this country, very uncomfortable. And so you have the perception, even if it's not the reality, but the perception that cases will not be heard fairly, impartially, and without consideration of race, gender, or any other impermissible consideration.
These judges, do they have a reputation for, you know, embracing this kind of language, this kind of behavior?
No, they don't at all. I mean, even the most conservative judges. So I do think it's extraordinary to have someone who would be in the chambers with the judge, not just who may have these feelings, but who has expressed these feelings in the past. It's just inconsistent with the federal court system as we've learned to accept it.
WABE legal analyst Paige Pate. And that's it for The Brief. You can find more local news on our website at wabe.org. Lily Oppenheimer produced today's program. Our editor is Kathleen Quillian. I'm Jim Burris. Thanks for listening.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.